on case number 84345 and 84640, City of Las Vegas versus 180 Land and vice versa. And I see we have handout materials here. All right, is everybody ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. And so, Ms. Leonard, we do have the chair there available for you. Of course, it's no problem at all to accommodate you in that way. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. So as you will know, but I'm just making clear this morning, you have your full 15 minutes. When the clock gets down to the 5 minutes, the yellow light will come on and there'll be a tone, but the clock will keep running. So if you're still there, the time is still running.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Debbie Leonard on behalf of the City of Las Vegas. The city could not have taken what the developer never had in the first place. Because the developer never had a right, constitutional or otherwise, to have a redevelopment application approved, there was no regulatory taking here. Yet the district court's judgment rests entirely on the incorrect conclusion that the zoning designation alone gave the developer a constitutional right to build any housing development it wants up to the numerical limit allowed by zoning. This court has reiterated over and over again that zoning does not create vested rights to develop because cities have the discretion to choose between allowable uses and determine what uses are attractive and contribute to the public health and welfare. So let me start with the court's long line of cases because the court need not tread any new ground here to reverse the judgment. Let's start with Boulder City, which involved the denial of a building permit for a senior home, even though the area was zoned for the proposed use. The project proponent sued for a taking, as well as other constitutional claims, and the court held that because a building permit was discretionary, under the applicable land use laws, the developer did not have a constitutionally protected property interest. Boulder City alone requires judgment in the city's favor here, yet the district court did not even address this case. And notably, in the 150-page brief the developer submitted to this court, there is not one mention of Boulder City, much less any effort to distinguish it. In Tye versus Van Gorkin, this case said, compatible zoning does not, ipso facto, divest a municipal government of the right to deny certain uses.
Ms. Leonard, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you and just ask this then. This is not simply saying you can't develop 7 homes per acre, it can only be 4 homes per acre or whatever, something along that line. We have evidence presented here by respondents' expert to the effect that there are no valuable uses that can be made of the property at this time. So does that not distinguish this case from the ones you're talking about?
No, Your Honor, for a couple of reasons. First, the developer's expert did not look at the most important limitation on land use that existed at the time the developer bought this property and before the city denied the application that's at issue here. And that designation is PROS, or Parks, Recreation, and Open Space, which was the general plan designation for this property that was sought and obtained by the developer's predecessor and prohibited the construction of housing. The developer admitted that there could still be golf course use on this property. And historically, the developer's predecessor, Piccoli, sought out to use this property as a golf course and an open space recreational and drainage amenity for the rest of the Piccoli Ranch master plan area. So it had an existing use. It had been approved. It was offering value to the remainder of the master plan area.
There's evidence that golf course use was no longer profitable and did not add value at this time.
Your Honor, the takings clause does not make up for changes in value and speculative business and real estate investments that end up not panning out. The takings clause is not designed for that purpose. And so here, the developer had an existing use, bought a golf course that was designated Parks, Recreation, and Open Space. As this court recognized in the Binion case, in order to get to convert the open space to housing, the developer had to obtain a general plan amendment from the city council. And it was completely discretionary whether the city council wanted to convert open space into housing or allow for that to happen.
What about the RPD 7 designate zoning? How does that comport with the POS?
So the cases that I was going through, Boulder City, as we just talked about, also Tye versus Van Gorkin, and Stratosphere, all dealt with zoning designations where the project proponent was seeking out an application to use the property that was allowed by the zoning district. And the court, for example, in Stratosphere, it involved the affirmance of the denial of a site development plan review application, the same application that was submitted here and denied, even though the area was zoned for the use. Stratosphere wanted to build a roller coaster, and the city said no, even though a roller coaster was allowed within the zoning district. And if, according to the developer's position here, in denying Stratosphere's application, the city would automatically have been liable for a taking because a roller coaster was allowed by zoning. So zoning does not determine what is allowable. The court said this, Nevada Contractors, America West Development, zoning is a restriction on use. And the general plan, according to Chapter 278, and this is reiterated in the city's Unified Development Code, the general plan takes precedence over the zoning.
Isn't, if I may, though, isn't there a factual question in the record about how the 35-acre parcel has attached to it the Parks and Recreation open space label? In other words, I understand that when Pecoli Ranch was developed, there was a PR06 designation for the unit as a whole. But isn't there a factual question about how the 35-acre parcel came to be categorized in that way by the city?
No, Your Honor. The record has the ordinances by which the city, and these are duly adopted ordinances, the city adopted the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space designation. And this was all according to Pecoli's plan. Pecoli wanted to set aside this golf course as an open space amenity. RPD 7 zoning allows for a developer to concentrate housing in certain areas to allow greater expanses of open space. That's exactly what Pecoli did. And the duly enacted ordinances are presumed valid, and there's been no evidence presented by the developer or any to overcome the presumption of validity of the PROS designation. So there's nothing that calls into question that PROS designation.
Don't the city's own employees and perhaps those who should know say that zoning trumps that designation?
So there was initially, there were some statements by the former city attorney and some planning staff that suggested that either zoning trumps a general plan designation or they were unaware of that designation. Subsequently, they corrected that. They learned that that was an error of fact. And the law is the law. Again, the ordinances are in the record, and they state very clearly that, along with their associated maps, that this area got designated as PROS. And that became clear when the developer went to file applications for the 17-acre portion of the Badlands. The city required the developer to include a general plan amendment application, which, again, this court addressed in the Binion case. So I want to be clear about the importance of these precedents that I just mentioned, because they say that the developer's bundle of sticks never included a right to redevelop the golf course. Yet that is what the judgment relies upon, and it simply runs afoul of these authorities. And if the court were to affirm, it would have to overrule all of these authorities. So what was the district court's justification? According to the district court, these cases involve petitions for judicial review and not inverse condemnation claims. First, that is flatly wrong because Boulder City involved constitutional claims, including inverse condemnation claims, or a inverse condemnation claim. Second, it's a distinction without a difference because there is no separate substantive law of petitions for judicial review. Boulder City says you look at the applicable land use laws to determine the property interest. The law is a law no matter whether the developer brought petition for judicial review or inverse condemnation claims. I spoke briefly about the PROS designation. The requirement for the city to create a master plan, which it calls its general plan, is in Chapter 278. Chapter 278 clearly says that that zoning regulations must be implemented in accordance with the master plan. And this court has repeatedly emphasized the primacy of a master plan. Nova Horizon, in which the court said the master plan is a standard that commands deference and a presumption of applicability.
Go ahead. Just briefly, though, before you leave that point, but doesn't it also say existing zoning trumps master plan in 349? 278, 349, 3E? Existing zoning would trump it.
No, it does not say that. If Your Honor is referencing the part of the statute.
If any zoning ordinance is inconsistent with the master plan, the zoning ordinance takes precedence.
So that statute addresses only a subdivision map application, not a site development review application, not a general plan amendment application. And it lists a number of factors that a city must consider when reviewing a tentative map application. And that is only one of the factors. But it also says it's only if there's an inconsistency between zoning and the general plan. Here there's no inconsistency because RPD zoning is designed to allow for use of open space. That's the open space designation that existed since Pecoli got the master plan approved, and so there was no inconsistency for that statute to apply. So there are a number of other points that we made in our briefs, but I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you.
Good morning. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for my reply on cross-appeal. Oh.
Thank you for the reminder on that. Yes, so you heard the rules. Go ahead.
I did. Thank you so much. Jim Levitt on behalf of the landowners, Four Stars and 180 Land. Members of this court, the issue before you is whether the city of Las Vegas can preserve private property for use by the public, with the public actually using that property, and take that property from a residential value and reduce it to a zero value without paying the constitutionally mandated just compensation. Now, at trial, the city didn't seriously contest that it engaged in taking actions. The city didn't seriously contest that the actions that it engaged in impacted the landowner's property to such an extent that it rendered it valueless. I was trial counsel. They didn't seriously contest that. Instead, the argument that the city made, which is what you heard today, is that there was this PROS narrative and that there happened to be a PROS on the landowner's property sometime in the past. We don't know when. We don't know how it got on the city's maps. But there was a PROS, and that PROS prohibited the landowner from using the property to begin with, and therefore the city could do whatever it wanted to the landowner's property. That was the narrative that was presented to Judge Williams as a district court judge. Timothy C. Williams held 6 days of evidentiary hearings, and Judge Walker hit it right on the head. It was a factual question on whether there was indeed a PROS ever placed on the landowner's property, and over a 6-day period, that PROS argument permeated all of the hearings for the city of Las Vegas. We even passed that issue, went to the take hearing, and the city spent 90% of the time at the take hearing on the PROS issue. And so Judge Williams took evidence on that, and at the end of that evidence, he concluded, number one, that the property was zoned residential, residential-PD7, which is not consistent with the PROS master plan land use designation. He determined that gave the landowner the right to develop his property residentially. Number three, that zoning was of the highest order in the state of Nevada. And number four, rejected the city's PROS narrative after 6 days of evidentiary hearings. And we have a handout.
Would you respond to the argument that, okay, zoning is one thing, but that doesn't give your client a right to do a particular development?
I'm going to go to that right now, Your Honor. Chart number one, on the left-hand side that we've submitted to you, on the left-hand side has the facts that Judge Williams relied upon to determine to make those four determinations and to reject the city's PROS narrative, not the least of which was, I call it the 4x4 evidence, going down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that the city planning department and the city zoning department, four individuals at the head of those departments, determined that the property was zoned for residential purposes, and to respond to your question, Justice Kadish, that zoning gave the landowners the right to use their property for residential purposes. Four city attorneys at the city of Las Vegas, including the city attorney, Brad Jerbick, and the following city attorney, Brian Scott, submitted affidavits, deposition testimony, Rule 11 pleadings, and statements at the city council that consistent with Judge Williams' four findings, that the property was zoned residential, that gave the landowners the right to develop their property residentially, and rejected the city's PROS narrative. So going to your question, Your Honor, why did zoning give the landowners the right to develop residential units on their property? In the case of Tyler versus Hennepin County, it was a case just decided 8 months ago by the United States Supreme Court, a 2023 decision. The court said, we're not going to allow the government to define property rights in inverse condemnation cases. Because in that case, the county of Hennepin made the same exact argument the city is making here today. They said, we may have taken Ms. Tyler's property, but she never had a property right to begin with. And so the United States Supreme Court said, and this is their words, we're not going to let the government manipulate property rights in order to avoid paying just compensation. That's their words. Instead, what we're going to rely upon is traditional property practices, historical practices at the governmental entity, and the court's precedent. So what was the historical practice at the city of Las Vegas? We know it in the 4x4 evidence. All of the heads of the planning department, all of the heads at the zoning department, all of the city's attorneys confirmed that the property was zoned residential, which gave the landowner the right to develop their property residentially, and they followed that up with the zoning verification letter in 2014. When the landowner was doing his diligence, he went to the city of Las Vegas and said, hey, I'm thinking about acquiring this property. I want to know what your official position is on my rights on this property. And the city issued him an official zoning verification letter stating the property was zoned residential and said that residential zoning gives you rights under our zoning code. And the zoning code specifically states, again, to respond to your question, Justice Kadish, that when your property is zoned R-PD7, this is 19.10.050 of the Las Vegas Municipal Code, there's the number one permitted use by right: single-family and multifamily residential uses. That's in the city's own code. That's why the city attorney...
Can you give me that site again?
19.10.050, and I believe it's subclause C1. It's in this section that says permitted uses. That's the city's own code where the city stated, when you have residential zoning on your property, you have the right to use your property for residential purposes. Now, on the chart that we've submitted to you, the first section there says 1981 Z-34-81. In 1981, the very first act that the city made on this property was to zone it residential-PD7. The very first master plan land use designation was also medium residential. In 1981, they were both consistent. That is uncontested testimony. We also have the testimony from the city attorney's office that they did significant research to see if that MED designation of residential was ever changed on the city's master plan to PROS following NRS Chapter 278. The city attorney's office and the planning and zoning department did significant studies to make that determination and found that it had never been changed to PROS. These are the facts that Judge Williams had before him when deciding the property rights the landowners had at the time they acquired the property. And that's how he came up with those four findings, not only based upon the city's own historical records, but based upon the 4x4 testimony of the city's planning and zoning and city attorney's office. Now, there was a statement that they corrected that. They never changed that testimony. They never changed that opinion. That was the consistent opinion by the city of Las Vegas and the Nevada United States Supreme Court says that historical practice at the city of Las Vegas is what we will use to determine property rights in an inverse condemnation case. And then Judge Williams, on the right-hand side, went to the law. And he did reject Stratosphere. He did reject Nova Horizon. He did reject Cinnamon Hills because they were all land use planning and petition for judicial review laws. And Judge Williams followed this court's precedent in City of Henderson where you said PJR law and land use law and substantive due process law is its own creature. You cannot bring that law into the realm of eminent domain and inverse condemnation. You have to follow inverse condemnation law. And the inverse condemnation law in the state of Nevada is in the right-hand side of this column here. This law comes from the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. All three branches in the state of Nevada have held that zoning is the highest order in the state of Nevada, and even if there was an alleged PROS designation on the master plan, zoning takes precedence. You never apply the master plan. And Justice Stiglitz and 278.349, that's exactly what it states. That's the only place the legislature addresses what do you do if there's the inconsistency between the zoning and the master plan. And the legislature decided we're going to apply zoning statewide over any alleged PROS master plan. Now, the backup argument for the city is, well, PROS is consistent with the residential-PD7 zoning designation. I got a handout for you right here, which is the city's own zoning code chart. And it's in the record. It's 87JA15270. And it has the PROS master plan designation up here, and then it has the consistent zoning in the table, and residential-PD7 is not one of them. The only one that's consistent with PROS, according to the city's own code, is CV, public use. So PROS is not consistent with the residential zoning. Judge Williams, after six days of hearings, rejected this PROS narrative and followed Nevada inverse condemnation law. In County of Clark versus Alper and in City of Las Vegas versus Bustos, the very same issue that's before you today came before you in those cases. And in both of those cases, you said we need to apply zoning and not the master plan. In County of Clark versus Alper, that exact issue was before you. In City of Las Vegas versus Bustos, that exact issue was before you, and you applied zoning because that's what our state applies above any alleged PROS designation on the city's master plan. Now, I will just very briefly address Cinnamon Hills because that seemed to be the case that the city seemed to cite to most to try and say it has discretion to deny land use applications. That case involved a substantive due process claim, number one. Number two, the court found in that case that there was not a denial of all economic viable use of the property. And after the Cinnamon Hills case, in Lingle versus Chevron, the United States Supreme Court said you never apply a substantive due process analysis that was done in the Cinnamon Hills case in the inverse condemnation side of the case. That's absolutely improper. In the City of Monterey versus Del Monte Dunes case, the United States Supreme Court heard the same exact local law, local zoning ordinance argument that we've heard from the city in Amakai here today. And what they said in that case was if you rule in favor of landowners, you're going to turn land use law upside down, and the United States Supreme Court rejected that argument and said, we're going to, in the context of inverse condemnation cases, we're going to apply inverse condemnation and taking law. We're not going to carry land use law and petition for judicial review law over into the context of inverse condemnation. That's City of Monterey versus Del Monte Dunes, a United States Supreme Court opinion, where they said land use law, so that whole body of law you just heard of, Stratosphere, Nova Horizon, the council just cited to Cinnamon Hills, United States Supreme Court said that body of law shall not apply here. Here's why. Because in that realm of land use law, the government has discretion to deny land use applications. If you carry that discretion over into an inverse condemnation case, then all the government has to do is say, we had discretion to deny your land use application, and therefore you never had a property right to begin with. They will have erased property rights and can take property from landowners anytime they want. Now, I do want to mention one last thing. So on the take issue, we have a chart there also that we submitted to you. On the left-hand side are the take facts that Judge Williams relied upon during 6 days of evidentiary hearings. He concluded after 6 days of evidentiary hearings that the city was preserving the landowner's property for use by the public and rendered the property to a zero value. And members of this court, importantly, the last thing that's on that chart there is there was an expert who testified. He looked at the city's actions and determined the impact of those city's actions on the landowner's property, and he said it took the landowner's property from residential value to zero. The city had three opportunities to get an economic impact report. Judge Williams actually, at one of the summary judgment hearings, says you don't have a report, and he reopened discovery and gave the city 4 more months to get an expert report. In other words, they had 3 times, the initial exchange, rebuttal exchange, and he reopened, and they didn't get one because they conceded to the impact from the actions that the government took to the landowner's property. And members of this court, Judge Williams found that expert's report persuasive. That expert, again, let me just say this. I'll add this. Not only did the city not get its own expert to rebut that, the city didn't object to that report during the liability phase, and the city didn't object to that report during the just compensation phase. Meaning when Judge Williams decided just compensation, everybody conceded to that report being admitted, and he awarded just compensation based upon that uncontested expert report. So members of this court, clearly Judge Williams had substantial facts before him to support his property interest finding and his take finding, and it should be affirmed. His post-trial issues should also be affirmed, attorney's fees, costs, and reimbursement of taxes. And on the interest issue, I'll submit that on the brief. We do claim that Judge Williams abused his discretion on the interest issue because the only expert testimony before him stated that the rate was 23%. The city, again, didn't produce an expert report on that issue. And so the interest should be reversed, and the court should enter interest in the amount of 23%. And I'll save my last 30 seconds that I have here for rebuttal. I meant to say 3 minutes, but I guess I'm only going to get 30 seconds. Unless this court has another question for me. Nothing? Okay, thank you so much.
Actually, I do have a question.
Oh, okay.
In reading the reasoning behind the denial of the 35-acre application and then the denial of the complete application,
yes,
I didn't really see anything citing we want to maintain open space as a reason. It seemed to refer to public opposition and in the 35-acre application to concerns over piecemeal development. At any time that when the city approved the 17 acres originally, was piecemeal development an issue?
Absolutely. When the city initially approved the 17-acre property for development, there was significant statement on the record and agreement by the landowners that 17-acre approval would be entered into or part of the global overall master development agreement, which, as you recognized, the city of Las Vegas said that master development agreement was the only application it would accept to allow development on the property. The city wrote that master development agreement application. The landowners paid over $1 million for it, and the city at the end of the day denied its own application. And so when it denied the master development agreement application, it denied the development on the 17-acre property, which the 17-acre judge, David Jones, found. He found that same finding. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I want to go back and talk about the history of the development of this property because the developer has characterized it as a portion, the 35-acre portion of the Badlands, and then the Badlands being a portion of the Pecoli Ranch master plan. That is a critical issue here because the history here is that Pecoli in 1991 and 1992 got a master plan approved by the city. And then with that approval, Piccoli and this developer, as well as others, built out 85% of the master plan area as housing, with thousands of units of housing, commercial uses. This all included Queens Ridge Towers. It included Tivoli Village. It included a destination hotel and casino that's now the Suncoast. And this conferred substantial value on the developer. And then the other 15%, Piccoli built out as the golf course, and it says in the record that the purpose was as an amenity for the rest of the master plan area. It provided recreation, it provided open space, and it provided drainage. And in order to build the destination hotel and casino, the developer was required to have a recreational amenity, and that's what the golf course served. So 25 years later, this developer comes along, buys the Badlands that was already serving its purpose for the master plan area.
It's my understanding that the buyers in the Piccoli Ranch community actually got a disclosure that, in fact, it didn't have to be maintained as a golf course and could, in fact, be developed residential.
That's a totally separate and irrelevant issue, because that was only with regard to, I think you're talking about the Queens Ridge CCNRs. That's a contractual matter between the Queens Ridge homeowners and the developer. That has nothing to do with the land use authority of the city. So the city approved significant development, and in both the master planned area and the Piccoli and the Badlands. And what we have here is this classic example of segmentation, which the Supreme Court rejected in Penn Central and Murr, and this court rejected in Kelly. And so when you look at these authorities, you have to look at the fact that at a minimum, the Badlands is the relevant parcel for determining whether there is a taking. And let me turn briefly to some of the points that my colleague just raised, because the city never disputed that there's RPD 7 zoning, but again, going back to what did Piccoli do? Piccoli had this vision of a master planned area that set aside areas for open space to increase the value for the rest of the master planned area. It was a use conferred upon the original developer, and the city approved for this developer a significant development on a 17-acre portion of the Badlands. So I didn't hear my colleague, can I just finish this one point?
Yes.
I didn't hear any real substantive discussion as to why the court should just dispose of its long line of cases that say zoning does not confer a vested right. And as the amici have noted, this case has very significant consequences for land use decision makers. It means that if they deny an application, which the law clearly gives them discretion to do, they're going to be liable for multi-million dollar judgments that will cripple the treasuries of public entities throughout the state. So we, based on well-established law that the district court ignored, we think reversal is required. Thank you.
Thank you. You used up your time.
I know. Can I have an extra 40 seconds?
No, I think you went 40 seconds over time.
Oh, no, I went 30 seconds under. Council went 40 seconds over. I'll be
30 brief. Seconds, go.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, what you just heard is that at the beginning of time, the city of Las Vegas imposed a requirement that this property remain a golf course. That evidence the city presented below was commonly referred to as Exhibit G. All the district court judges looked at Exhibit G, and all of them rejected that argument. And the reason they did is because Exhibit G not only does not impose the requirement that this property remain a golf course, but it expressly removes it.
Give the citation?
I'm going to hand this to you. I have six copies, and the citation is 57, Part 2, JA 10105. And Judge Williams had this before him, and he said, wait a minute, I read Exhibit G, and Exhibit G proposes a golf course as a requirement, and then expressly, when the ordinance is passed, it expressly removes it. And so, Your Honor, there never was a requirement that this property remain a golf course into perpetuity. I will end by quoting Ruth Bader Ginsburg in Arkansas versus U.S. She said, time and time again, we've heard the prophecy that governmental entities, if they have to comply with the Constitution, will be crippled. She rejected that argument now. This court rejected that argument in Sisolak in footnote 88, and you should reject it. Instead, we follow the Constitution despite the cost. Thank you. And I'm going to leave these copies that I referenced
with the clerk, please. Okay. All right. Thank you. This matter.